Welcome to the Fight White Genocide podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff, where we talk about whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number 4, recorded January 28th, 2018. This podcast, we have a special guest, Lord Nelson, joining us. Today's topic is assimilation, unity, and the proposition nation.
All right, well, we're back here and on the Fight White Genocide podcast and with Jeff, Ken, and myself, Laura Fitzgerald. And today we have Lord Nelson joining us again from the UK. Nelson, you were actually one of the original Bugsers. For people who don't know you, you came across Bob Whitaker's work on Stormfront. Is that correct?
Yes, in the very early days. I remember when he first started posting on Stormfront, and I remember some of his early ideas and whatever fresh air it was. And I've sort of been in the frame thereabouts ever since, really.
Absolutely, yeah. It's really Bob used to talk about that a lot on Bugs, as you were one of the very first persons who picked up his work and started using the mantra. He was very proud of that. Do you recall at all what it was, the first post that you saw of Bob's on Stormfront?
Well, yeah, I remember the first post, but what really, when we go back to the mantra and our whole sort of basic thing, Bob put up a series of podcasts and he had links to it, I think, on his page on Stormfront or on maybe on the original Bugs website. The Ever Ready Man was one and a couple of others. And I remember listening to them and I just remember this line, all white countries and only white countries. And then I sent Bob a message via Stormfront just saying, keep up the great work, and I love that bit about all white countries and only white countries. And he got back to me and said, I'm working on something about that. And then we got Bob's mantra. And I just remember he was doing everything that I'd been trying to do, but just doing it a lot more efficiently. So I was always about not getting tied down on silly arguments about black crime stats and whatever, you know, IQ scores. And I always remember just wanting to go on the attack and point to the crime being committed. And that's exactly what Bob did. I was trying to do the same thing, but where I would take 10 posts, maybe a couple of hundred sentences, he was just a lot more getting to the point. And the minute I saw what he was doing, I just took to it immediately. I just knew that's where we wanted to be going.
Yeah, it is amazing how he had such a brilliant way of simplifying talking points and breaking it down. You know, he spoke a lot about the basics and the sub-basics, and he was a genius at that. Well, I wanted to, I guess we'll lead into what we're actually discussing today, which is the difference between a nation based on a people or a proposition. Jeff, did you want to go into a bit about that to start off with?
Well, this was sort of prompted by calls from right-wing pundits for unity. So what they're saying is we have to unify around this proposition that America is based on, you know, some values. And Bob has often pointed out how a nation is either based on a set of words or it's based on a people. If it's based on a set of words, then you can't allow any disloyalty to that set of words. You can't allow any serious questioning of those set of words. So you have to have censorship. You can't have freedom in a nation like that. And that's what these right-wing pundits seem to be wanting to do. Now, that's at one level. On another level, it's just part of the white genocide scam. They're just rebranding it in a different way. We're starting to chip away at diversity. We're starting to show what a scam that is. Diversity is a code word for white genocide. So they're switching their tactics. Now they're coming up with unity. We all have to shut up and unify. We all have to accept the proposition that all men are created equal and anyone can be an American if they have the right values and all that.
I think that's exactly, you know, and what we've noted here is that shift we have just taken away the term of diversity and multiculturalism. We've now noted that they're moving towards this use of unity and stating that, you know, multiculturalism, diversity has failed. And the reason it's failed is because we haven't unified and we haven't assimilated well enough.
Yeah, that may be, but I think the way that we deal with it is just to treat it like what it is. If we just treat it as another attempt to justify white genocide. And whether some of the conservatives genuinely have some belief in this what they're saying, or whether they do or they don't, I think the way that we handle it is exactly the same. But I think as far as we should be concerned, whether you try to justify white genocide under diversity as our strength or unity as our strength, it's the same thing. It has the same end goal, the same end result. And to me, I would just, if I ever got confronted with that in a debate, I would just simply say, you're simply trying to justify white genocide. It's the same old, you know, different words, but I don't really give it any more credence than that. I just see it as the usual twist on things, but with the same agenda and the same ultimate outcome.
You're absolutely correct, Nelson. You are correct. It is, as they constantly do, they just change the wording, but the end result is exactly the same. But it's interesting to note that we are seeing that, you know, that change has happened, as we saw the same with the term racist. You know, they ended up moving away from that term towards white supremacist because we had hammered the fact that anti-racist is a code word for anti-white.
Yeah, I mean, imagine a few years ago if I would have told you that they would be on Fox News saying diversity isn't our strength. And now they're, of course, they're adding to that. Diversity isn't our strength. Unity is our strength. And it's actually on part of the anti-whites is actually a pretty good tactic as far as I'm concerned. I mean, as far as if you're playing 4D chess or whatever, it's actually a good move by them. To do that, but it, at the end of the day, it's exactly what Lord Nelson was saying, is that it's the same tired tactic, same agenda. They're just, you know, moving it all towards the same direction, towards white genocide. They're just trying to change tactics up. And we've seen it before in Europe when Angela Merkel and Sarkozy were saying that multiculturalism has failed. And you saw a lot of pro-whites in Europe kind of cheer that on.
Getting excited.
What's that?
You saw a lot of pro-whites getting excited.
Exactly.
Like they finally admitted it's not working out, like as if they thought it was going to work out. Mm. You
know? Exactly. They got excited. And I'll be honest, I liked it too when I first heard it. I'm like, all right. But then you hear what Sarkozy said about, well, the goal is to mix the races. We have to intermarry and become one brown race, because we're not allowed to be one race as white people. We can only be one race as non-white people. And so it's the same thing that happened in Europe with Merkel and Sarkozy saying multiculturalism has failed. We need more assimilation. And you're seeing that now within the American conservative narrative, is that diversity isn't our strength. Unity is our strength. It's the exact same tactic. And again, the end objective is still the same, and that's white genocide.
Right. We've seen that the move now has transitioned to assimilation. You know, forced assimilation, that they're realizing that we can't just bring in millions of people. We have to now push this assimilation and force, you know, unity, or trying to unify under the proposition. And that's, I guess, coming back to what we're discussing today, is the proposition. This whole call for unity and this forced assimilation is demanding loyalty to a proposition, a nation based on a proposition rather than on a people.
I read the report that was sent to me earlier, and I do see the point of it, that it's going to end up being enforced like some kind of tyranny if it's based on ideas.
In a nation based on a people, serious disloyalty to that people, race, tribe cannot be tolerated. Anything, you know, any group that speaks out, or people that speaks out against this proposition, is silenced. You know, they are enforcing, as you probably, you know, you have in the UK, Nelson, is the hate speech laws, thought police. You know, if anybody speaks out against this, they are labelled and censored.
Absolutely, I mean, we concentrate on the white genocide point, because that is the biggest issue. You know, when people try to wipe out an entire ethnic racial group, But behind it all is an ideology, and whether you want to call it Marxism or whatever it is, some kind of crazy leftism, I don't know, but a big part of it is completely totalitarian. And we have the hate speech laws, but the state gets to decide what kind of speech is hate. So I could call out white people for being uniquely evil and racist, et cetera, and that's perfectly fine. But if I just raise an eyebrow at the number of brown-skinned Muslim men being imported into this country every year, that could be defined as hate speech. And I point out some true crime statistics, not that they really matter, because the bottom line, the point is genocide, not the crime stats. I couldn't care if every Muslim was an absolute angel. But again, it's these are laws that are just giving the state more and more and more power and control over everybody. So there is a bigger, there's a much more to this issue. But of course, the bottom line is a big part of this ideology is that one particular ethnic group, that's the white ethnic group, was quite simply done away with in their own countries. It's a very different discussion, but I'm always fascinated as to how we got here, how everybody above a certain level in society is bought into this sick ideology. Who knows? That's for another discussion, I guess.
In a propositional state, hate speech, whatever you want to call it, it's always the same. It's anything that disagrees with the premise of what the country is founded upon. You know, in the Soviet Union, they had free speech under their constitution. It guaranteed free speech under the Soviet constitution. At the end of the day, you were allowed to say anything you wanted as long as it didn't go against the proposition of which the country was founded upon, as long as it didn't go against Soviet values. You were free to say anything, just like a slave on a plantation was free to say and do anything that he wanted as long as it didn't go against master's proposition. And that's exactly the same kind of situation that we're in now under a politically correct religious theocracy, under a propositional state that's based around political correctness. We have quote-unquote freedom of speech. We're allowed to say anything we want as long as it doesn't go against the proposition of political correctness. And it's the same all over Western civilization, not just America, that we are founded upon essentially what we view as a religious theocracy, and the religion is political correctness.
It's political correctness, but a big part of the ideology is unfortunately there cannot be any white countries, and ultimately in time there's not to be any more white European people, whether in America or even in Europe. And that's a big cornerstone of this ideology that our elites have bought into, sadly enough.
The only reason America could have free speech was because it was based on a people. It was created by a bunch of white people for ourselves and our posterity. And if there's any question about what that meant, it was cleared up by the First Immigration Act, which only allowed free white people to become naturalized. So now they said e pluribus unum. Well, yeah, they meant for many white ethnicities, one white ethnicity. They didn't mean non-whites. The founders somehow knew that all these white people could get along, that all their disagreements and hostility in Europe was mostly artificial, and they were completely right about that.
The point of a propositional state versus an identity-based state, you know, is that a multiracial state by default has to be based upon a proposition, because it cannot be based upon an identity. You cannot base a multiracial state off of an identity, so you have to base it upon an idea. And if your country is based upon a singular monolithic idea, then you can't have freedom of speech. Everybody has to conform to that one idea. That's the problem, like with America today. The original United States, founded by whites for whites, they could allow freedom of speech. They could allow a quote-unquote diversity of propositions. But under our current country, you can't do that. You can't have a diversity of propositions because the proposition is already set. We've already set the proposition. The proposition should be able to evolve over time and change. Ideas change. And eventually our proposition should be able to change, but you can't do that under a propositional state because it is static. It has to remain that way. And you can't allow anybody to say anything that might be destructive to that proposition. And that's the whole point. As Jeff was saying, is that our founding fathers could only give us free speech because we were based upon white identity.
Yeah, and these conservative pundits, they like to look back at the founding fathers, and they like to claim that something said there proves their point. But when you look at it, it doesn't hold up. The first Immigration Act was white only. In the Constitution, the actual law of the land, it said it was for ourselves and our posterity. Now, mm-hmm. we put e pluribus unum on our coins, yeah, but they were referring to white people. And in the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal. Well, that was a war document when they were desperate for help from European intellectuals. That's the only reason they put that in there. They didn't take it seriously.
I think they meant it as in all men are created equal, as in a common-born Englishman or a common-born American was every bit as good as an English king or an English aristocrat. And I think a lot of the, I don't even think they were contemplating other races. I think it was purely among the white Europeans who predominantly were British in America, I think, at that time, be they Scots, Irish, or English, or Welsh. I think they just simply meant all men are created equal, as in the lowest white European or British peasant was every bit as much right to freedom of expression and to, you know, to have as much right as a duke or a aristocrat of some description. That's why I understood they actually meant it.
Yeah, one thing is for sure is that they didn't mean it the way that liberals and respectable conservatives mean it today. Because we've all seen their writings, the founding fathers' writings on race, and we know that it's nothing to do with what liberals and conservatives are saying that it was based upon. That's just something that they decided to change over time and pretend that the founding fathers meant something that they didn't. Yeah, which we've seen a lot of that in our history.
In the Constitution, they specifically denied titles of nobility. So, yeah, that's all they're saying. You know, you're not born with privilege or rights over other people. You have to earn those.
I guess maybe Americans now don't really see it, but coming from the UK, we still have a very class-orientated society. It's not that bad, but I can picture the environment that the colonialists in America would have known, where a governor would be brought over from England to rule over what is perhaps today the state of New York or something, for example, or Boston, I don't know. And they automatically assumed rank and authority and looked down on the people actually born and bred on the continent of the United States as it became. And I think they're kind of reacting to probably a lot of very highbrow British administrators and, you know, people like that. I think it was more a stab against British snobbishness and class hierarchy than anything to do with race. That probably didn't even enter their heads back in 1776. I don't know what they would have made of the world today, to be quite honest. I don't know what you guys think of that, but I do feel it's more, they would have been more aware of the British class system than probably even I am. If you were an American colonist, a British colonist in America, in a build-up to the American War of Independence, I think you probably would have felt the sharp end of the British class system even more than myself as a modern-day Brit.
Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. The whole equality thing that all men are created equal, as far as I'm concerned, basing our country on a proposition such as that is basically essentially writing a blank check to communists.
Yeah.
It really is. And that's one of the reasons it's not a good idea. The other reason is a propositional state in general is not a good idea. A nation-based, an identity-based nation is far more stable. When your country is based upon an idea, I mean, that ideas change, you know, and not everybody's going to embrace it. It's just not a good thing. It's not a good concept to base a country upon.
The values come from the people. They come from the genes of the people. If the genes change, then and the people change, then the values change. Mm-hmm. And it's changing the documents is no problem.
No.
The more you get into this modern day political correctness, it's just communism. It's just been rehashed as another form of Marxism. And the parallels between what we're seeing in our politicians and media today compared with the early Soviet Union or any communist country for that matter, it's more and more obvious. So we've basically inherited the communists have took over and they've sort of reinvented themselves, and they're based along racial lines, and they've decided that white people are the enemy and have to be taken out by any means necessary. The parallels between what we have today in our ruling elite and the old communists are pretty shocking. So it's an interesting subject. It's just like this disease will not go away. And going back to Bob Whitaker, I always remember reading in Bob's book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood. And he talked about how the reason that leftism is so popular in universities, our colleges, is because leftism or Marxism teaches these kids in the universities that under the leftist Marxist system, they're going to be running everything. Mm-hmm. So it's teaching them that they're going to be the intellectual intelligentsia, and the rest of us are all going to be the peasants, the workers, or the soldiers. this intellectual ruling elite, the educated ones, will be the top of the tree, running all the society. So it appeals to people in colleges, universities. That's why, to me, it was Bob that said this, and it does ring true when you think about it. This kind of Marxist, communist sort of psychotic horribleness, it breeds in academia.
Mm. You know, if you take that a step further, Nelson, is that they're forced to accept it because they're forced to fit in. You know, if they want to fit in on campus, they have to agree with everything. They're taught not to question it. It's funny that you brought that Why Johnny Can't Think, Bob's book up, as I was just looking at it, and he says, you know, political correctness is very much closely linked to multiculturalism. It trains the young to accept and parrot the notion that all races, cultures, sexes, and sexual practices are equal, and that it is a grave thought crime to deny this. You know, that's exactly where we are at with this proposition of all races are equal. You know, and if we deny it, you know, we won't have a job, we won't have a future, and we'll be labelled, you know, with anti-white hate words.
Yeah, but the problem is that the people who go on to run the media, to run academia, to run politics across all political stripes, generally come out of the universities. And so when you have the universities turning into a breeding ground of Marxist communism and whatever it mutates into, then down the line it's inevitable that across the media and across all the political parties, et cetera, across the legal systems, all these people were all brainwashed with the same Marxist nonsense, the same political correct, call it what you want, in the same universities. And of course, they have to go play along with it if they want to get their degrees and get on in life. But it's also very tempting to go along with it, because if you read your communist preamble, and I haven't actually read the whole thing in Das Kapital, Karl Marx, whatever. But as Bob points out, it's right there that the world will be intellectuals, we're at the top of the tree running everything, and then all your educated ones is going to the university, etc. And beneath them will be your workers, peasants, and soldiers, with the intellectuals just running everything. And so these kids at the university get taught that they're going to be part of the intellectual class, and we're all the poor peasants and workers and soldiers, and we need them to run our lives.
Yeah, that's why we call it mommy professor. Yeah. Mommy knows what's best. Mommy knows what you need and what you have to do to make this society better. Listen to mommy professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people try to define what leftism is, but Bob came up with the best answer. It's a scam to put intellectuals in power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything you look at, leftism, that fits.
That's it. The power, power of the intellectuals. That's right.
I went to a local supermarket. I think you say grocery store in the States. And I went to the tobacco kiosk just to get some bits and pieces, like, anyway. And they were running out of certain items. And this was a major chain, a major supermarket chain. And I asked the woman why it was so, like, getting short on stock. And she explained to me that they've now got a new rule that there's, like, a central planning office and only somebody with a degree sits there and decides when to send more of a certain item out to a certain store. So apparently it used to be that the person serving at that particular cash out, register, till, whatever, when they saw a particular item getting low in stock, they would then send a message off to the supply house to send more of that particular item. But now they don't have the power to do that anymore. And it's just like everything's being more and more sort of, you have to have a degree to sweep the roads. I think I saw some at once, but you have to get a degree to work in McDonald's and flip burgers. So everyone has to be indoctrinated in the college system or whatever. But I do like that line by Bob. It's a scam to put intellectuals in power.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is.
And what I guess, if you know, what's even more interesting is the fact that this is only happening in white countries. You know, this program isn't being pushed in non-white countries.
Well, again, it's very much like the original communists. They decided they took a particular scapegoat. Now, I'm not up on communism. It's not something. But did they call it the bourgeoisie? There's another term for it. But they blamed one particular class. So in Soviet Russia,
kulaks.
The kulaks, I guess. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the landowners or whatever it was. And they just blamed everything on this one particular class of people. So it was all class-based. What they've done is they've replaced class with race. So now it's all race-based. And they've decided that it's the white folks, that we are uniquely evil in the world. And the way they're going to achieve their Marxist workers' paradise is to do away with all the white folks. So they cannot be a predominantly white country. They cannot be a predominantly white area. And ultimately, over generations, white people will be encouraged to breed themselves into extinction. That will help clear the way for the Marxist workers' paradise, and we'll all be living very happy lives in a utopian Marxist wonderland. if you spend enough time in a university, you could end up believing something like that. I'm a big believer that with enough educating, you could be made to believe anything. And there you go. It's my theory.
Yeah, and you're right. It is race-based here, and it's not happening to Africa. They're not going to Africa and saying, oh, look, black people own everything here, and there's some kind of evil hierarchy here of black people owning stuff in black countries. But they are going to white countries and going, oh, well, look, it's this horrible system here where white people have created that white people own everything, or they own the majority of things. How horrible. Like you said, in the Soviet Union and elsewhere, it was all class, but now it's race, and it's all the same objective, the same end goal.
Yeah, they have to make it like white people didn't earn any of this stuff, that they don't deserve it, that they got it because of privilege and oppression. It reminds me of the French Revolution there, where they attacked the aristocrats, the people that just were born into power, wealth, and privilege. They're recasting the whole white race as those aristocrats.
Yeah, exactly. And when they talk about white privilege in predominantly white countries, the real goal behind that is to dispossess white people from their own lands. If you no longer have a part of the world where you have a privilege, because it's the part of the world where your ancestors built and created, it's your world or your country. That's a form of dispossession, you know. Is there white privilege in the United States of America? Well, I certainly hope so.
Because yeah, there should be.
The day there isn't any white privilege in America is the day that America is no longer a white country. If you go to countries in Asia, it's full of Asian privilege. You know, go to a Muslim country, it's full of Muslim privilege. Go to Israel, lo and behold, it's full of Jewish privilege.
They like to conflate two things. They say white privilege. Well, if you're talking about white privilege, you're talking about a whole race. But then they say, well, any one person in that doesn't deserve that privilege. If they're talking about white privilege, white people earn that, okay, as a race. Nobody gave them anything. But if you're talking about one individual in that, in a white country or in a white civilization, well, they didn't necessarily earn it all. But the white race as a whole did. Now, if we look at Japan, well, every Japanese person benefits from what the Japanese race as a whole created. It doesn't mean they don't deserve it. The Japanese race as a whole earned everything they have. The Chinese race as a whole earned everything they have. Nobody gave them any privilege. So just because, you know, any one white person didn't earn everything in white civilization, that doesn't mean that the race as a whole didn't earn it.
There's loads of those paradoxes, like the whole thing about racism and slavery and blaming white people for everything. They will assign collective racial guilt upon a newborn white baby born in a country like Sweden. And they will talk about slavery and the Holocaust and, you know, white supremacy and you know.
I think, you know, just to bring a different point in here, the reason, though, that this is such a topic, as Bob points out, is because there's money in it. There's money in white guilt. There's money in the Holocaust industry. There's no money in saying, you know, Africans are as guilty of slavery as white people. You know, there's no money in that. The reason why we are constantly pushed with these white privilege and white guilt and all this is because there's money behind it.
Well, I agree with you, but I'll go a bit further and say the reason there's money behind it is because at the highest levels of society, it's an agenda that's being pushed. Right across the media, academia, the legal services, judiciary, of course, the world of politics. So it creates an environment where if you want to get on and if you really want to get a government grant and possibly get that job, you want to parrot the status quo, if you like.
Yeah, you got to tell the people that are given the money what they want
to
hear.
Right, you have
and
to
right
show
now, the people with the money are the anti-whites. It's anti-whites are power.
You have to show your loyalty to that proposition.
There's not a lot of money in what we're doing, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Maybe one day, you know, we're going for those reparations against these anti-whites who are pushing these programs. You know, hopefully one day we will. We'll have our pro-whites out there scouring the internet for anybody who has ever pushed programs of anti-whitism and
white genocide.
And white genocide, exactly.
Well, that day has to come. And then, I mean, Bob talked about it. For sure, we have to get to a point. I mean, I've been saying it from the early days that, you know, getting on the attack, get off the defensive. I mean, that one reason that I think that anti-white steering away from the word racism is they must realize that racism, although it's a made-up word, if it was a real word, it would. I mean, the racism is being directed against white folks that are being turned into a minority in their own countries. And, you know, the one racial ethnic group that's been told by its own ruling elite that they don't exist and they don't have a right to have a country. You know, I do kind of feel that we should take that word now and just make it ours and use it to bash our enemies with, but whatever. But definitely we've got to get to a point very soon where it's got to be reparations. And you don't want me talking about that because I'll probably go a bit too far like I did the last time.
Right. I mean, normally the word racism is a word used to describe discrimination within white countries. Since white people are being subjected to mass immigration, of forced assimilation, then the non-whites are somehow victimized by racism. But if you look outside white countries and you look at the entire thing in perspective in a global scale, nobody is more victimized by what you would call quote unquote racism than white people, as we are the only race on the planet being told that our race has to be destroyed. And if we don't like it, then we're somehow bad people in general. If we don't want to destroy ourselves, we're bad people. So as you pointed out, Nelson, if the word racism has any substance behind it, it's because white people are the true victims of it.
And you are a racist if you don't support the racism against whites. Quite simple. You must be racist against them if you're a racist.
That's why in the real world, anti-racist is just a code word for anti-white. You're trying to redefine it as something objective, but okay, good luck doing that. I prefer to just destroy the term itself.
deconstructing, you know, discrediting that term is more important at this point in time. I mean, we've heard pro-whites talk the same thing about, you know, the use of swastikas or, you know, Hitler, you know, trying to, all that sort of point, you know, it may come, you know, eventually one day it'll turn around. But at this point in time and in this point in our fight, we need to really focus on deconstructing these terms and finding ways to constantly attack the new terminology, as we're seeing with Unity, being aware that they constantly are changing, right? They're changing their terms constantly, and we need to be aware that how we can deconstruct each term and how it is, it has an anti-white intent.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, basically what we were talking about earlier is showing that they're trying to move and change the narrative now, and like we were pointing out. And I brought to your attention the other day about Tucker Carlson on his show having a segment, and he starts out really well. He's attacking diversity, and then he ends the segment by saying, "Diversity isn't our strength. Unity is our strength." And we're seeing this as a new narrative. And basically, as my intent with this was to make people aware of this new narrative that they are going to be pushing to. They're going to be agreeing with some of our stuff, like diversity isn't a strength. I agree with that statement. And actually, I agree with the statement unity is our strength. But my idea of unity is different from what you're going to see on Fox News and conservative and liberal outlets. What they mean by unity is that all races work together to blend away white people. Now, unity on itself is a great word. It's a good idea. If I could get everybody to unite, all races to unite together against white genocide, I'm all for it. Totally for that. But that's not the agenda that conservatives and liberals are pushing towards.
No, you can't have mass immigration and unity without ultimately getting white genocide. You can have unity among all the races. If you still had a 1950s America that was 90 plus something white, and the rest was African Americans who predominantly lived in their own areas, and there was a stigma against interracial marriage and stuff, you could preach unity to some extent. But when you have mass immigration for all white countries and only white countries, and then throw unity into the mix, along with race mixing propaganda on the TV 24/7, it's just a recipe for white genocide, basically.
Yeah, when they say unity now, they're demanding that everybody follow the same proposition, same set of words. They're trying to artificially force everybody to have the same mindset. If you're all the same race, you don't have to do that. So I'd like to introduce the term homogeneity. That's the alternative to unity. If you're all the same, you don't have to try to artificially force unity, try to brainwash everybody into thinking the same way. You're already unified. You're naturally unified. You don't need all this propaganda.
Right. What we're talking about, it's a great way to put it. It's natural unity. What they are pushing is some kind of Orwellian groupthink where everybody conforms to one way of thinking, and that's quote-unquote unity. And again, it's the exact same thing that they did in the Soviet Union. It's the same under any religious theocracy, whether it's Islamic theocracy or some other type of theocracy. It's always about conforming to one idea. And when you do that, again, then your nation is static. You are not going to evolve into different changing propositions, which is what any nation should actually gear towards, as to a changing proposition. You know, some ideas might be better than others. And if you're not willing to implement those, if your proposition is static, then you're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to quote-unquote progress, if that's the word you would like to use for it. As a general outline for a stable country, you would want the proposition to change. But we can't do that the way things are today.
What we're not seeing, though, is that the non-whites aren't going along with this unity thing. You know, it's very much accepted from white people. You know, they believe in and will buy into this concept. But we're not seeing, you know, the same acceptance from non-whites. you know, we're being forced to accept it and take it as the gospel, and yet we see, you know, this division of, you know, with the example of that is the NFL kneeling. You know, there was a huge push there from Trump to push for this civic nationalism, this unity, you know, that they should unify under the flag and everyone should stand up and be one, but yet, you know, they have their push to not want to do that. You know, they have their complete anti-white hate, you know, the hatred of white people. And but yet we're, you know, we just have to accept it. And if we stand out against it and oppose it, you know, we're the ones that are labeled as the haters and the Nazis.
Right. Blacks haven't been stripped of their natural identity. And they haven't been stripped of being allowed to recognize that. Only white people are told we're not allowed to recognize our identity as a group, or work towards our own interests, even if our own interests are simply surviving and existing in the future. We're not allowed to organize and move in that direction. And you're exactly right. I mean, that's what the NFL kneeling. Huge uproar in the States over this, Nelson. The NFL players were kneeling when they were playing our national anthem, and it angered a lot of American football fans that they were doing this because we're all supposed to be unified under our anthem or whatever, our proposition and quote-unquote values, because, again, we can't be unified under natural identity, so we have to be unified under words and values. It angered a lot of people when black people were unifying under their own natural identity.
Yeah, for decades, white people have been browbeat into giving their country away and not having any racial solidarity or racial advocacy for themselves. But non-whites have not. They're allowed to express their racial interests and work for their racial interests. I look at this NFL kneeling thing as the first serious attempt to get all the non-whites to go along with civic nationalism and drop their racial advocacy, especially when it's a scam to begin with. You know, non-whites are not oppressed by the police or whatever they claimed it was. And, you know, your average white fan looks at these people, they're multimillionaires, probably live in a better house, better neighborhood than they do, complain about oppression in a white country? I mean, where do you think you're going to have it this good? People, come on.
I did watch it last summer, the kneeling thing in American football. I studied it with interest. I get most of my news from YouTube. And I watch Fox News, Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity, because they're just about bearable. I can't watch terrestrial UK mainstream news. It's just too far gone.
Yeah, I mean, Tucker is somebody you can watch without throwing something at the TV. Sometimes you kind of want to, but not as often as you would CNN or these other people out there. So I'll say that about Tucker. You know, I'll criticize Tucker. It's tough love. Same to Alex Jones. I like Alex Jones. I actually watch him a lot. I think he's entertaining. Like Tucker Carlson, but sometimes they say things that are misdirecting people.
I just want to skip back here. Jeff, I want you to just go and explain that again. So you're saying that you view the NFL kneeling as a move by the non-whites towards civic nationalism?
No. Well, Trump was telling them to stop doing it.
Right.
Okay, so yeah. That was...
It's a conservative push.
It's the first serious attempt...
Conservatives are trying to push them.
First serious attempt by anyone in power to get non-whites to go along with civic nationalism and drop their own separate racial interests and, you know, go along with all men are created equal, you know, the proposition nation, and stop complaining about all these fake oppression scams. The first serious attempt by anyone in a, you know, in a position of authority like the president to get non-whites to go along with civic nationalism. Whites have been browbeat into doing it for decades, but they're starting to notice, well, how come the same standards aren't being applied to non-whites? So that doesn't seem fair. And you don't want anything to look unfair to white people, because white people are all about what's fair. You know, you're gonna lose them. So that's why Trump did what he did with this NFL thing, to make it look fair to white people, to keep white people from going to our side. You know.
Right, because it was becoming more blatantly obvious that it wasn't being reciprocated. This feeling of unity isn't that they're trying to push wasn't being reciprocated. And his, you know, the kneeling, Trump's call for unity under the flag, you know, the national anthem, mm-hmm. That we all stand and are proud for our country of a, you know, melting pot of diversity and multiculturalism.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big push within the civic, quote unquote, civic nationalist movement now to try to destroy identity politics. And this is a move towards that by attacking them for kneeling and all of that. They want to attack all identity politics mm-hmm. now. And it's going back to the unity and the groupthink that we all need to unite. Yeah, the proposition. We all need to unite under a proposition that leads to white people being wiped out at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why we are against it.
And I think it's way too little, way too late. These victimhood narratives and things are firmly entrenched, you know. You're not going to get rid of them anytime soon. The thing is, non-whites are naturally loyal to their own kind anyway. Only white people can be in any serious way, you know, believe any of this anti-racist stuff anyway. They're going against biology. They're going against history. I don't think they're going to be successful. They certainly haven't been successful yet.
Just out of interest, I've never watched the interview or the debate with Russell Peterson and Kathy Newman on British Channel 4.
Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson. Yeah. Yeah, I like Jordan Peterson. He never talks about race, but everything else he says is usually spot on.
Well, the thing I find so fascinating about it was, although it's not our thing, but it is another branch of the same religion of cultural Marxism or political correctness. And it was an interesting study how he handled their arguments, and he did kind of tear her apart, which is great. And I know our thing's not about what that debate was about, but again, where she was coming from was just another branch of leftism. And of course, the main stem of that tree is white genocide, as we all know. And it's the biggest, you know, you can set men and women against each other, but the end result is ultimately the genocide of a particular group. But I kind of find it fascinating how he not only did take that debate on, but how he handled it, and how, more than anything, the popular interest across the world in the actual debate. It's like you can't quite express the same feelings against white genocide so publicly, but of course, in that kind of subject, which I guess was it, the oppression of women, misogyny, sexism and stuff, it's not such a hot topic that people don't feel afraid to stick their neck above water and just point the finger and take a stand. So I guess like Jordan Peterson, he'll never mention race, but he takes a stand against Marxism in various branches where, although it's hot water, it's not quite as hot.
So. Yeah, clearly it's not as taboo as white genocide because they're debating it on national television.
Yes, of course.
They won't let us do that. They want our topic completely covered up and silenced. So, but I mean, when I listen to Jordan Peterson, I hear a lot of like mantra thinking coming from him.
I agree. Someone mentioned Alex Jones. The most infuriating thing I find about Alex Jones is when he tries to compare everything bad to the Nazis. And I'm not exactly a Nazi, but when he's describing what is pure Marxist leftist communism and tries to tie it with Adolf Hitler and not Karl Marx or Joseph Stalin, but anybody bad, like that George Soros, the Jewish billionaire, he's just like
he's a Nazi.
He's a Nazi. Yeah, he's not a Nazi.
Soros is a Nazi.
Yeah, maybe he wasn't, but he's a bloody communist now. Anyway,
I heard him call Oprah Winfrey a Nazi the other day. Word to God.
Yeah,
called her a Nazi.
There is that thing. I just wish he could just point to the right direction where what it actually is. These are Marxist communists pursuing a new breed of Marxist communism, where it's not the kulaks, it's the white people, it's identity politics. Jordan Peterson mentioned it a bit in that debate on Channel 4 with Kathy Newman. And it was so funny when she tried to catch him on something about transgender rights protesters being like Chairman Mao or so, people like that. And he sort of, she asked him why, as if he couldn't spell it out. And the guy's given whole lectures on the dangers of Marxist communism. And of course, he just answered the question and tied him in knots. So it was quite beautiful.
Well, he demonstrates somebody that's been out there in the real world talking to people and debating these things. Like, he's so confident in what he says, and he knows what people are going to say before they say it. And that's why I say he's thinking like mantra thinking. He's got it kind of down like we do on the topic of white genocide, except his topic is mostly like feminism and that kind of stuff. But that's demonstrating somebody that's been practicing what he preaches out in the real world and talking to people and debating with them.
And it was so delicious to watch that arrogant anti-white Kathy Newman just go marching in there, barging in like so full of confidence that she was going to control the debate, and you humiliate this misogynist, sexist, closet white supremacist Jordan Peterson, and just watch her intellect get torn apart and exposed. That's pretty good to watch. I must confess, I probably watched it about 15 times in full. And so there you go.
Yeah, I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched just the few parts where he was pretty much blowing her out of the water and rendering her speechless several times, and she didn't know how to respond. She had to recover.
I can just think of when we get to something like that where the topic is white genocide, and watching an anti-white member of the establishment getting torn apart and exposed as a brainwashed genocidal maniac on live TV. And also, yep. I'd like to see these people, not all of them, but people that are the key movers and shakers in the whole white genocide agenda of the last few decades, being put on court, being put on trial. And I would like the trials to be televised. And I want pro-white lawyers to grill them, expose them, and tear them apart live in a courtroom being televised to the nation, and punishments being dealt out accordingly. But that's maybe for another show.
Well, I think just going back there, you know, what you were discussing about Peterson is that he was able to use talking points to destroy his opponent. And yep. That is 100% what we are doing, and the purpose of, you know, these chats and what Bob Whitaker has laid out for us is to use simple talking points to destroy our anti-white enemy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Peterson is he's not being intellectual so much. I mean, the guy is an intellect. I mean, he's a brilliant guy, super smart guy, but he's not destroying points with intellectualism. He's destroying them with just obvious truths and logic about people.
Yeah, because if you break down the arguments of the left, in this case with the Kathy Newman debate, there was nothing really intellectual or clever about any of her arguments. It was all based on buzzwords, attack words, and these twisting things. It was very much like the playground type of argument between children. And that is what we've been dealing with ourselves in the whole white genocide thing. Labeling people as racist, so many obvious contradictions in the arguments put forward for white genocide. And that was a big part of the early Bugs movement, was not to get tied down. If you take it back to the old Stormfront days, not to get tied down posting links to endless studies on IQ and race, not to get tied down posting links to the black crime stats, but just to get to the point. To call it what it is. He didn't get drawn into long-winded explanations of anything. He just pointed out the obvious, pointed out a great contradiction at one point, and you saw the end result. And that was that.
Yeah, and he put on a clinic. I mean, because what she was doing half of the time was putting words in his mouth and saying, so you're saying this and that, and then he's like, no. Yeah. No, and a lot of people get caught up into that and allow their opponent to do that without correcting them. And so they find themselves being put in defending assigning a position that they don't even hold. And that happens a lot with us, like with what we're dealing with. It would be nice for him to jump on our message because we could use people, more people like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other, you know, the other point there with talking points is about making it or repeating them. You know, repetition is what works in this game, and to have a talking point and just keep repeating it. Don't give the enemy an opportunity to, you know, put words in your mouth or you know, making the statements for you. It's just repeat, making those simple points of exposing them and repeating it.
And that's what he would do. When she would put words in his mouth, he would say no and then repeat his position. And we find ourselves doing that a lot.
And that's it. So with the, you know, with coming back to the Unity talking points and how we are facing new words, these buzzwords, as you guys said before, it is always the end result. The call is always for white genocide. No matter what they're saying, what they're pushing, the end result is white genocide.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the only thing that will remain the same. They'll change their position. They'll change their memes and change their ideology. But it's always going to work towards a world without white people every time. And that's what they're doing now. Diversity isn't our strength. The unity is our strength.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sort of changing their position, but it's still leading to a world without whites. And it's going to continue doing that. Everything that they're going to do is always – it's always going to have the same end result, no white people.
When they started flooding white countries with non-whites, some people said, well, you want us to interbreed, don't you? And they said, oh, no, 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 we don't want that. But now they're admitting it, aren't they? They said, the answer is assimilation. The answer is unity or assimilation. We all got to blend together into one brown race. They're admitting that diversity didn't work. Okay, so your last program you forced on us didn't work. Why should we trust you now? That's one thing I would say. Another thing is, well, so wait a second. You're telling me you admit you made a mistake. You flooded our countries with all these non-whites. Now you're saying it was all a mistake. And the solution is for us to be drowned in diversity and to give away our countries and interbreed with these people until there's no more of my race left. That's your solution?
Mm.
Just to fix your screw up? We have to destroy ourselves?
Yeah.
And basically, our job is to keep calling them out on it. It's white genocide. It's white genocide. It's white genocide. It's white genocide.
Yeah.
Mm. It's not, anyone hasn't got it yet. It's actually white genocide. That's what it is. keep on repeating it and pointing it out. And so whatever they call it, unity is our strength. Diversity is our strength. We don't have to try and overanalyze it too much. But end of the day, it's white genocide. And just call them on it repeatedly. Call them on it time after time. And be merciless. Don't pay them any respect. Don't pay them any courtesy. You know, anybody like that, they're pushing white genocide. Don't let them forget it. You know, in a more sane world, they'd probably be up against the firing squad. And I didn't say that. But... basically, that's all we need to know.
It's the same program with different packaging, different marketing.
Exactly. Yeah. It is.
And when people are pushing white genocide, call them out on it. You know, don't spur their feelings. Mm. You know.
Yeah, they're not pushing these programs in any other country. It's only happening in white countries, and it's all white countries. Yeah. And that is why it is white genocide.
Yeah. And like Nelson was saying, is don't spare them any feelings. They're not sparing you any feelings. They're pushing genocide on your race. There's really no reason to be nice to them.
Yeah, have no respect for them. I was too respectful early days of Stormfront. I wouldn't repeat an argument. So if I put forward an argument to an anti-white and they didn't respond or they just ignored my question, then I would rephrase the question. I'd come up with another question. I learned from Bob. If they haven't answered your question, post, copy and paste the question again in full and keep on doing it and make them deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm embarrassed to say I was too courteous to do that. Mm-hmm. I'd let them off the hook time and time and time again, as did everybody else, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But I learned from Bob Whitaker very early on, you know, don't pay them any respect. If they haven't answered your question, repeat it. And so verbally, if they don't answer your question, repeat the question. If they pretend they've answered it but they haven't, don't accept that. Repeat the question. Repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. Attack, attack, attack. It's white genocide. And always reframe everything they say in terms of white genocide. What Cathy Newman is trying to do to Russell Peterson, or Jordan Peterson, sorry. There's actually a famous Brit called Russell Peterson, I should explain. She was trying to reframe all these arguments in terms of misogyny, sexism, or being bad to women. But we can reframe all their arguments in a similar debate about white genocide as white genocide. And just keep throwing the topic down their throats in a debate. And that's what we should be here to do. Don't let them off the hook.
Yeah, you can't take anything they say at face value. Everything they say is a code word. They want to get rid of white people, but they don't come right out and admit it. So they have to couch it in all these terms, you know, fairness, equality. But they're always arguing for a position that leads to a future with no white people. So.
And I think, Bob, that is it. You know, then Bob talked a lot about the fact that we're the interrogators. You know, we're the ones that are charging these anti-whites with a crime, and genocide is a crime. Well, guys, I think we've covered it. Is anything further?
Well, yeah. One thing, you know, some of these people say, well, we should let in people regardless of their race, as long as they have the right values. But these same people, if those people's children don't have those values, they never say that they should leave or should be stripped of their voting rights or anything. So they don't really believe in values. They it's just a scam to flood white countries with non-whites. If it wasn't, then they would be screaming just as loudly to deport people who don't have those values. Once in a while they do it to white people. Yeah, they say,
racists
should
leave.
Yeah, but never a non-white. Never, you know, never.
They'll do it to us and say,
Black Lives Matter. You know, they never tell them, well, you don't believe in American values, do you? You're fighting for your kind. That's not American. You know, you have to leave. No, they never say that.
No, same. Yeah, no, same with Mexicans.
Yeah.
Oh, we've lost Nelson.
That's a great point. When non-whites do not accept the proposition, nobody's saying anything. Nobody's asking them to leave.
They say non-whites have birthright citizenship. Well, why? Why? If it's about values, why does anybody have a right to be here if they don't have the values? It's just a scam to flood white countries with non-whites. That's all.
Exactly.
Someone like Jordan Peterson have the views that he has. I would say that we may not have been the biggest single influence, but I bet he's been scouring the internet and looking at various alternative views, etc.
I think our techniques have seeped in. You know, the fact that the fact that it's a propaganda war, it's a meme war, that is out there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And he's part of it. I mean, it would just be nice to get him doing our stuff. Man, because that guy's a battle horse, man. He's a badass. But for real, I don't really like his topics, but I like listening to him. I like listening to what he's got to say because he's got an interesting way.
He's attacking our enemies, so I guess yeah. That's good. I'm still kind of up in the air whether what he's doing is good for us or not because he is an anti-racist, aka anti-white. He is discrediting political correctness, so I guess, we'll see. You know, he certainly wouldn't be on the top of my list of people to go after.
I'd be glad to give him a couple bit of slack because it's easy for us to talk, but for someone in his position, they're just looking for an excuse to go after him. And if he even dropped the slightest hint of having any sympathy at all for the kind of stuff that we are about, they could use that to, he would get attacked for everything that some 14-year-old kid hiding behind a swastika said on Stormfront in the last 20 years. You know, they would just bring the whole thing down upon him. So,
but regardless if they do or they don't, they're still going to get, I mean, look at Tucker. He's not openly pro-white or a white nationalist or anything like that, and the media is going spastic over him at the moment about him being racist.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they call him a white, like a king of white nationalism now. I'm seeing it everywhere. Like Media Matters, they pretty much say he's almost a full blown Nazi.
Yeah. So at some point, you know, they're going to have to, if they are, they're going to be known by their actions, whether they are or they aren't. And Peterson, I think he's entertaining because of his tactic, the way he does go about doing it, which his method appears to be very similar to how we do things.
Yes. That's why I find him entertaining.
Well,
Well, let's leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us, Lord Nelson, and we look forward to having you back on.
Okay, guys, thanks very much. It's been great. Look forward to it. Cheers now.
Thanks.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to see more of our work, please visit our website, fightwhitegenocide.com.